Okay, let's begin. So it's Parshat Yitro this week. That means the Sedra in which the Torah is given. And there's a key point, and we're reading a discourse which was said on Shabbat, that Shabbat of Parshat Yitro. It was in 1974. And this was published by the Rebbe. This is a discourse that was edited in final form by the Rebbe, and it was published in 1990 in honor of his wife, whose yahrzeit is the 22nd of Shvat. Mm-hmm. Yes, so this is a discourse published in her memory. So let's have a look at, so it kicks off not in the beginning of the Sedra, but in the middle, where it talks about the Jewish people coming to the land, to Mount Sinai. So, Bachodesh HaShlishi, it was in the third month, Letzeit B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, after the Jewish people went out of the land of Egypt. By Yom Hazeh, on this day, Ba'u Midbar Sinai, they came to the desert of Sinai. They came to the Sinai desert.
I think I'm on the wrong side here.
No, we're just reading this.
Okay.
Sorry, we're just looking at this first verse. Verse number 1 in chapter 19. You see
right.
that?
Yeah.
You see, so in the third month, you can see it in the English, in the third month of the children of Israel going out of the land of Egypt, on this day they came to the desert of Sinai. And this is the verse which is the kind of key to the discourse. A discourse always has a... usually it begins with a verse which like opens a door. And so this is the verse which opens the door for this discourse. And so now we're going to enter the discourse proper. So we've just looked at the beginning of that. So we're going to try to explore the discourse. But first we'll have the melody of the discourse to help us understand it. You see, because the melody opens the heart. And the mind and heart joining together are able to absorb the spiritual teaching of the Maima of the discourse. Ayam bam ba ya ya yom bam bo ya yera yera yam bam bo ya ba ya 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 ba yom bam bo. Ayiramba ya yiramba yom ba ho ya yiramba ya ya ho ya yiramba ya ma yom ayiramba ayiramba ho ya ya yiramba ho ya ya yiramba ho ya ma yom ma ma yom aho ya ya yam bam bam. Okay.
Why did we stop?
All right. Okay, the beginning of the discourse on page 5. Bachodesh HaShlishi. In the third month, he's repeating this verse. Letzeit b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Of the Jewish people going out of the land of Egypt. By Yom Hazeh, on this day, Ba'u Midbar Sinai, they came to the desert of Sinai. In other words, they came to the desert, which is just next to Mount Sinai, and that's where they're going to hear the Ten Commandments. God is going to speak to them in a very inspiring way through Moses, and then they're going to hear the Ten Commandments themselves. Now,
let's ask a question.
Of course.
There's not Ten Commandments there, because the first one isn't a commandment, it's a statement.
Well, according to Maimonides, the first one, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, is a commandment to believe in God. To be aware of God, to know that God is the essence of all existence. So that's what the first commandment is.
Mm-hmm. So that's more like a statement, isn't it?
Well, they're all called statements in Hebrew. they're called Aseret HaDibrot, and Dibur means speech, and so it's like the ten statements.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But even so, in English we call them Ten Commandments, and they are and the Rambam explains the first one as being a command to believe in God or to know God, as he puts it. Belief is not enough. You have to know God. And in order to know God, you have to think.
And you have to learn Chassidus.
Well, in effect, yes. I mean, the Rambam, you know, had his own style of thinking and meditation, but it's what today is called Chassidus. Now, then we have a fascinating link which is made in the Talmud. This is line 3. V'ita b'gemara, and we learn in the Talmud, K'tiv hacha b'yom hazeh. It says here, in this verse that we just quoted, b'yom hazeh, on this day, ba'u midbar Sinai, they came to the desert of Sinai. U'k'tiv hatam, and it says somewhere else, which is actually earlier in the book of Exodus, ha'chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadoshim. This month should be for you the first of the months. Now, that month should be for you the first of the month is when Moses is telling the Jewish people in Egypt that the month of Nisan is going to be the month when they're going to be redeemed, and they should understand it as being the first of the months. That's why when we count the months, Nisan is the first month. And he was also telling them about the idea of Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, the beginning of the month. So the Talmud is now making a connection. Ma la lan Rosh Chodesh. Just as in this second verse, it is the new moon, the first of the month, Afkan Rosh Chodesh, so too here, when we're talking about the month, the third month, now Nisan Iyar Sivan, so the third month is Sivan, it is also Rosh Chodesh. So that's the way the Talmud proves what day did they come to Mount Sinai, the Sinai desert. It was the first of Sivan. So you understand, it's really it's the word Bayom Hazeh. It's this phrase. Or hazeh, the word this is like a kind of hyperlink which connects one with the other. So the fact that it says hazeh here and it says hazeh there, it says this in this place and this in the other place, that connects the two together. Since we know that the second verse is talking about Rosh Chodesh, the first of the month, so we know that this verse in our Sedra is also talking about the first of the month. And it's well known, the point that's raised, the fact that it just says this day, it doesn't say the first of the month, it just says this day, and we have to learn it out. Now Rashi explains that there's another meaning to the word this day. The reason why, when they're coming to get the Torah, the reason why it says on this day, because it should always be this day. Whenever we learn Torah, it should always be this day. It should be something new. Shiyu divrei Torah chadashim alecha, words of Torah should be new, ki'ilu ayom nitnu, as if they have just been given. See, that's the problem. That a person learns certain aspects of Torah, certain aspects of Jewish lifestyle. Oh, you know, I know it, it's easy. Really, every detail of Torah teaching and every detail of Jewish life is full of vibrant excitement and life. And it's absolutely thrilling, exciting experience. Every time one prays to God, every time it's Shabbat, every time one learns Torah, it's all potentially on an extremely exciting and vibrant quality. And so and many Torah teachings and the whole like spiritual tradition, whether it's Midrash or in the Middle Ages, there were various books written like the Duties of the Heart, and then Hasidic teachings, they are all, and Musa teachings for that matter, they are all teaching us the spirituality and the excitement which is there in Torah. Now, v'tzarich la'avin, now we have to understand, the perush v'yom hazeh kipshuto, the literal meaning, oh I see,
it's whistling.
The literal meaning of on that day, on this day, means that this day, Kai al Rosh Chodesh Sivan, it means the first of Sivan, as we just quoted from the Talmud, putting two things together, that it means the first of Sivan. But the second explanation, like it's two different explanations of the same word, the second explanation, that Torah should always be new, as if we received it today, by Yom Azekai, al kol yom dechol yomot hashana. The phrase, this day, means every single day of the whole year. Do you understand the... Because according to the second explanation, when it says, on this day, you were getting ready to receive the Torah, and it means today, this Tuesday. And so it is through all the thousands of years. It's always this day, it's today. Whereas if you take the way that the Talmud explained it, that the word this day here relates to the word this somewhere else, and that then means the first day of Sivan, it's only one specific day. All right, so that's one problem. One question. Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to consider, how is it possible that words of Torah b'chol yom kachadashim should always be new for us? How can that be? Well, you know, is it humanly possible for Torah teachings to always have this sense of freshness and newness for us? V'alachad kama v'kama chadashim. You see, they should be like something new. And then there's a higher level. They should actually be new. Not just it's as if they're new. They really are new. That you feel the same intensity of newness like with any new thing. And now, so what's the question? The Torah was given over 3,000 years ago. We've been keeping Torah and studying Torah for 3,000 years. How can it be new? Can we really feel it as something new? Now, at first sight, it might be possible to explain this. According to the way a teaching, a discourse with the same beginning, which explains the verse, there is a teaching which explains this is the introduction to the Ten Commandments. God spoke all these words. And then it says, the le'mor, now this is a fascinating concept, and let's try and see if we can understand it together. At the beginning of the Ten Commandments, hi Akiva. At the beginning of the Ten Commandments, God says, or the Torah says, God said all these words saying. Now, the question is, what does it mean, lemor, saying? The tevat lemor b'pasuk zeh, the word, the meaning of the word saying in this verse, peirushahu, the meaning of that is, shelimud ha-Torah, that study of Torah, yiyeh b'ofen de lemor, should be in a way of saying. Lachzo hadvarim, to repeat the words, shahakadosh baruch hu, which the Holy One, blessed be He, Omer Achshav, says at this moment. There's a fascinating idea that when we study Torah, God is saying those words of Torah at this moment. We learn Torah, and it's as if God is at that moment giving the Torah to us. And that's why it says, le'mor, that the God gave, these are the words, these are the Ten Commandments that God said, saying, and the concept saying means that whenever we study Torah, God is saying it with us. So at that very moment, we're getting this new teaching from God. Kamosha Katuv, as it's written, Ta'al Lashoni Imratecha. You go over the page. As it says, let my tongue repeat your words. Shahat Torah hi Imratecha. The Torah is the words of God. Elishaloshoni Ta'an, but my tongue is saying it, Ka'one Acha Omer, as if God is dictating the words to us. We think we're saying Torah. We think we're reading Torah. Actually, you know what? God is saying the Torah, and we are saying it after him. And therefore, if that is the case, that whenever we learn Torah, God is actually saying the Torah at that moment. Well, when we got the Torah at Mount Sinai, it was an incredible experience. It was with a tremendous sense of awe. It was a tremendous sense of excitement. There was fire on the mountain. There was the sound of the shofar. There was lightning. There was thunder. It was just an incredible experience. That's how it really should be whenever we study Torah. Ki limud ha-Torah, because learning Torah achshav, when we study Torah now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Advarim Ele Achshav. The Holy One is saying these words now. Ba'oto Ofen Mamash, in exactly the same way, Kibishat Matan Torah, as it was at the giving of the Torah. V'gam Zed Tzarich Bir. That also needs to be explained. D'kevan Shedvarav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chayim Mekayamim La'ad. Since the words that God says live and exist forever, bli shum shinui, eternally, without any change, ma mitosaf mitchadesh b'zeh, what difference does it make if God says it now, b'zeh she'omrim achshav, the fact that God is saying it now, od pam, again, the very fact that God ever said these words is incredible. The fact that these words of Torah come from God, anything we read in the Torah, any part of the Torah, you see, Torah includes all the different dimensions of Torah. When Moses was on Mount Sinai, the Talmud tells us, he learned every aspect of Torah, right down to the last generations, whatever a great scholar, two great scholars having a discussion together, one would explain to the other a new idea that he had, that was already taught to Moses on Mount Sinai. So the entirety of Torah was given to Moses on Mount Sinai. So whenever we learn something, we are learning something that comes directly from God. So the Rebbe is asking a very interesting question. Why do we have to say that God repeats those words now? The very fact that God once said those words is itself an eternal action. It's an eternal event which lasts forever. If God does something, it's an eternal thing. We do something, okay, it's there, and then it goes away, it disappears. But God is eternal. So God says those words of Torah, they have an eternal quality, even without the idea that God is saying it at this moment. All right, so basically, this first paragraph, we're bathed in a kind of different ways of looking at the immediacy, the intensity, and the excitement of Torah. And of course, we also have to be able to keep our feet on the ground, be organized, and do all the other things that we have to be inspired and organized.
I can't be organized. It's against my beliefs.
Well, that's part of it. You see, there's the upper unity and the lower unity.
I know.
The upper unity is that there's no world, only God, yeah. So you don't have to be organized there. Everything, including what we're learning here and the Torah. That's the point that I quoted, the idea that Moses on Mount Sinai learnt every aspect of Torah that would ever be discussed. So any book of Torah teachings which, communicated through the ages, they are all expressing something of Torah, and Moses knew that as well. And there's a beautiful story in the Talmud, in Menachot, how Moses was seeing all these rabbis over the generations.
And he saw Rabbi Akiva.
And he saw Rabbi Akiva, and it was like a 3D presentation, and he was able to step into the class. There was Rabbi Akiva teaching, and Moses stepped into the class and stood at the back, stood in the back row. And he hears Rabbi Akiva teaching. And it's a fascinating experience, and he hears what Rabbi Akiva is teaching. But then he said, and Rabbi Akiva is teaching about the, see, on the Hebrew letters in the Torah scroll. So you have, let's see, this letter. So there's what's called a tag, a little crown on top of the letter. Yes, a little crown. So Rabbi Akiva was explaining what those crowns mean. And Moses was fascinated by this, but then he began wondering to himself, wait a minute, Rabbi Akiva is supposed to be teaching what I got from Mount Sinai. I don't remember this. So one of the students said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva, where do these teachings come from? So Rabbi Akiva could have said, I had this brilliant idea, but he didn't. He said, this is what I have received in tradition from Moses on Sinai.
Oh, and did he actually say that in the Talmud?
Yeah, he said that. And so Moses suddenly realized, there's been a lot of discussion about this dialogue. Moses suddenly realized that implicit in the ideas he got is this teaching. Even though he hadn't realized it yet, but it's implicit. Mm. You know, so in mathematics, you can learn a theorem, and then that theorem has all kinds of ramifications. And the person teaching you the theorem, you know, they just teach you the basic thing, like Pythagoras' theorem. Yes, that if you've got a triangle, then and so this number squared, and that number squared equals that number squared. All right, so that is a theorem, Pythagoras' theorem. So then there are all kinds of ramifications that come out of that, you know, all kinds of extra bits, you know, that can be proved as a result of that. But you might not have, you might only know the beginning part, and you don't know the full end. Pythagoras might not have known the full end, yes? So in the same way, that's one of the ways they try to explain it. There's a fascinating discussion by the Rebbe about this. So implicit in Moses' teachings are all these extra dimensions. So
what does implicit mean?
Included in it.
Right.
Included in it.
But in a less obvious way, in a subtle way.
Yeah. Not obvious. Not obvious. Yeah. Not obvious. Yeah. So that's the... therefore, what we're learning here is included in Moses' teaching as well. Mm. All right, so here we're getting a number of different ways of looking at the immediacy of Torah, that when we study Torah, it is something immediate, it's coming from God. Whether we think of it in terms of by Yom HaZeh, on this day, that whenever we study Torah, it's as if this day we've received the Torah. Or the idea that God said the Torah words, and as we learn Torah, God is saying them again with us. God's repeating it with us, as if there's a hidden divine echo taking place as we study Torah. And even further, that even without God saying it with us, the fact that God ever said it makes it an eternal thing. Those words are always there, hanging in the air. They don't go away. A divine statement is there all the time. Even physical energy, there's the idea of conservation of energy, that if you put some sort of energy into a system, it doesn't actually disappear. It's somehow there. But when it's divine energy, it's something tangibly eternal. So just feeling that intensity and that immediacy of Jewish teaching, whether it's something that we're studying in the Torah or something we're doing, a mitzvah, Shabbat, whatever it is, it's exciting. Now we come to section Bet. Let's have a look. For Yuvan Zeh, now we can understand these, you know, the different ways in which this intensity and excitement of Torah, you know, with one or two questions. By Bahakdim de'ita b'midrash, let's consider what it says in the Midrash in order to explain the whole nature of the giving of the Torah. Torah is something profound, mysterious, and central to the whole project of the creation of the universe. And the Midrash, which is the teachings of the sages, explains this by means of a parable, a mashal. Mashal le melech. Now there's a story, a parable of a king. Shegazav ama, he made a decree, and he said, B'nei Romi, the Romans, lo yedu l'Suria, shouldn't go down to Syria. Uvnei Syria, and the Syrians, lo ya'alu l'Romi, they shouldn't come up to Rome. So in other words, he is master of all these different countries, and in some of them are the Romans, in one country is the Romans, and in another country, like further south, are the Syrians. And the king says there has to be a division between them. They cannot meet, these two peoples. Now this is a metaphor, this is an image about the way God created the world. Kach, in the same way, Keshabara HaKadosh Baruch Hu et HaOlam, when God created the world, Gazav Ama, he made a decree and said, Hashamayim Shamayim Lashem, the heavens belong to God, Vahaaretz Natan Livnei Adam, and the earth he gave to human beings. Now, in a way, that's easier to understand than the Romans and the Syrians, right? The heavens, we understand what's meant by heavens. Heavens means something spiritual, pure. There's an idea of purity, holiness. That's this exalted realm. And then there's the earth. The earth is where people live. And the earth, it's earthy, like earth. It's earthy. It's physical people doing physical things. And so there we have the world making money, reproducing, doing all the different things people do. Whereas the heavens, oh, that's something holy. That's a spiritual realm. Now, we could easily imagine, and for many people that is the case, they do think of it in this way, that those two realms can't interact together. You can have holiness, but it has to be with the exclusion of earthiness. If you have earthiness, you haven't got holiness. The special quality of Judaism is joining the two together. And that's the profound thing about the Torah, that the mitzvot of the Torah join the spiritual and the physical. Let's see how it goes on here. This is line 14. Kashebikesh liten haTorah, and then when God wanted to give the Torah, what did he do? Bitel hagzera, he cancelled the decree. Va'amar, and he said, Hatachtonim ya'alu le'elyonim, the lower realms can climb up and connect with the upper realms. Va'elyonim, and the higher realms, yerdu le'tachtonim, they can come down and connect with the lower realm. Va'ani amatchil, and the Midrash goes on, God says, I'm going to begin this process, Shenem, as it says, Vayered Hashem al HaSinai, God descended on Mount Sinai. Uchtiv, and it also is written, Ve'el Moshe Ama Ale el Hashem. And to Moses, God said, rise up to God. So there we have the idea that there is somehow a connection being made, and that is what the mitzvot of the Torah are about. The mitzvot of the Torah about kashrut, for example. Food. A person might think food isn't spiritual. Food is just what I eat. You know, try to be healthy, healthy food. But is food holiness? The Torah comes and says, yes, food can be holy. Food can be holy, food can be unholy. There's kosher food, there's non-kosher food. Sometimes, like on Shabbat, when we eat the food, the enjoyment of the food is part of the spiritual enjoyment of Shabbat. So suddenly you've got a joining of something physical and spiritual together. And so with all aspects of life, the physical can become merged with the spiritual. And precisely the laws of the Torah, which guide the way in which we use the physical, how and when and in what way and all kinds of special rules, that's what makes the physical into a spiritual interaction with the divine. So that really is, in a very profound way, that's what creation is all about. Creation is, God created the universe so that there should be human beings who are physical people living in a physical world, but they should experience godliness in their daily lives. And so giving the Torah is a crucial step in helping that to take place, that godliness should become part of daily life. Now, we're on to line 19. V'hine yadua, now it's known. Shahagilui lakud ba'olam, the revelation of godliness in the world. Shahaya b'sha'at matan Torah, which was there at the time of the giving of the Torah, miss out the brackets, haya b'derech milamayla lamata, it was in a way that is called from above to below. Hainu, that means shahagilui haya, the revelation was mitzad ha'amshacha milamayla, because of a flow coming from above. Vahamata, and actually the lower realm, lo haya kli lazeh, was not able to take it. Now, that's a very interesting thing. There's the idea of being a vessel, being able to take, to contain something. In therapy, sometimes the people talk about the idea of containment. A person has a very, very intense experience, which traumatic experience possibly. And then the question, whether the person is able to contain that experience and live on in a healthy way, or does that experience in some way break them up so that they're not able to function properly because they're not able to contain it. And very often what the therapist tries to help the person do is contain that experience. Now, the same thing with pure spirituality. Spirituality is very, very intense. And when God's spirituality is revealed, as it was at the giving of the Torah that we're going to have in the Torah reading this week, so it's something extremely intense. And the question is whether the people were actually able to contain it, and they weren't. It was an unbalancing of them. So there's a sense in which the giving of the Torah was vitally important and also unbalancing. So the sages tell us various things about it. For example, the people, one thing they say, they died, they expired, they fainted. It was so intense and they had to be revived. Or they ran away. Or they asked Moses, please, we can't take it. Please, just let God speak to you, not to us. It's too much. Right? In different ways, whether in the Torah text itself or in the Midrash, it repeats this idea in various ways that it was altogether too intense. The inyana tachtonim. Now, the idea that the lower ones, yalu la'elyonim, should rise up to the higher, hushu b'matan Torah, is the idea that at the giving of the Torah, nitana koyach, the power is given, shahavodah de Torah mitzvot, that... What? A pen.
Yeah, a darker one, please, because this is too... Thank you.
That... Is that okay?
That's great, thank right. you.
That the service of Torah mitzvot, shela'achrei matan Torah, which comes after the giving of the Torah, tif'ol bo'olam, should have an effect on the world, that it should be a vessel for godliness. Now, there are two aspects to this. There's the world being a vessel for godliness in terms of our perception of the world. And there's the idea of the world in itself. Can the world be a vessel for godliness, or is godliness so intense that the world itself can't take it? The idea is that through us doing mitzvah, let's say we're doing mitzvah with food. So what are the mitzvot we do with food? We do eat certain food and we don't eat other food. Not just because one kind of food is healthy and the other one isn't, but because the Torah says. We're doing it because it's a divine command. So there's a way to eat and there's a time to eat, like Yom Kippur, it's a fast day, so we don't eat. So it's the various ways in which we are that we're bringing Torah to connect with food. Now, food is a fascinating concept because it's through the food that we eat that each one of us is connected to places all over the world. We get tea from one country and whatever it is from a different place or a different part of England. Wherever it is, we're sort of connecting to nature. By the fact that we eat, we're connecting to nature. And then we wear clothes, and the way we wear clothes, there are Jewish laws about clothes as well. We can't mix wool and linen. The clothes have to be modest. All those different rules, whatever they are. Our homes, the home has to have a mezuzah on the door. So all different ways in which our physical lives around us have a Torah dimension. What's happening is the physical world is being transformed by this. So not only does the Torah transform us as individuals, it transforms the world around us. We are a kind of channel to bring the Torah into the world around us. So if we were to look at it graphically, we have God, we have the infinite, and then we have the person, right? Okay, so here we're going to have a stick person. And then we have the world, which is around the person, which we connect with the world. And then through Torah, which comes down like that, what is happening is the Torah goes into us and around us, and it affects the world around us. So it connects us to God, and it also connects the world to God. And so therefore, by the fact that we are connecting the world to God, we're making the world into a vessel for godliness. Right, so now we're on line 27, on page Vav. Dezesh al yedei kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fact that through the keeping of the mitzvah, na'aseh beru v'zivkuch badvarim sheba'olam, means that a purification process is taking place in those aspects of the world shebehem naasit ha-mitzvah, with which the mitzvah was carried out, va'ad shebechama inyanim, till in certain aspects naasim heim chefza shel mitzvah, the object that we are using becomes a mitzvah itself. Like Pesach, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah. Matzah is wheat or oats or spelt and water, which is baked as a matzah. Now, suddenly, that becomes a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah on the night of the 15th of Nisan to eat matzah, and that at that moment, by eating the matzah, we're connecting to God. So therefore, the matzah itself is becoming a mitzvah. A physical part of the world is becoming a mitzvah, is becoming a command from God. So who al yedei netinat koach miyuchedet, going over the page, this is through a special empowerment. This ability to do that, now here is an interesting statement. The ability to transform the world is due to a special empowerment shenitna b'matan Torah, which was given at the giving of the Torah. Dekevan she'amitzvot, since the commandments, v'hadvarim she'be'olim, and the things in the world, heim be'ein aroch legamrei, are completely different, right? So we've got, on the one hand, we've got the mitzvot. And on the other hand, we have the world. And the world and the mitzvot are two different things completely. The mitzvot is something divine, something spiritual, something holy, like a Torah scroll. Right? A Torah scroll is an expression of mitzvot. Very, very spiritual. And then you have the world. Actually, the Torah scroll is where the physicality has become holy. But you've got a mitzvah and you've got the world, and they're completely separate originally. Lachein, line 4. Therefore, b'chdei sh'amitzvot yifalu shinu bedvarim shebe'olam, in order that the mitzvot should have an effect on the world, hu dafka al yedei bitul hagzeira v'hamechitza. It's through breaking the barrier. It's as if there was a barrier there was some kind of barrier, which was that above here is heaven, and it's spiritual, and it's holy, and down here is earth, which is ordinary earthliness, unholy. Oh, earth refuses to write. Okay, so I have to do it with this color. So here is earth. So there's heaven and earth. Earthliness. And it seems now mitzvot are this side of it, and the world is that side. So how can the mitzvot have an effect on the world? So there comes the answer. Through the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, this barrier is being broken through so that holiness can enter the world and the mitzvot can enter and have an effect on the world. Not only are mitzvot done in the world, but they have a continuous effect within the world. And there's actually a transformation taking place.
Just about all the mitzvot are concerned with physical things.
Yes.
So by doing a mitzvah, you're essentially doing some physical action.
Yes.
And that action has a spiritual dimension to it, which then, when you do it, connects you to the spiritual level.
Yes.
So the mitzvah itself is in a sort of mundane sense, or in a real sense, a physical, more physical, material thing. The actual mitzvah is the doing. What it brings down by doing it is the spiritual.
Okay, well, the way that I think you're asking an important question, and the way that I understand the answer is in terms of an image that we have in Hasidic teaching, that Jacob, in some subtle way, kept the mitzvah of tefillin. How did he keep the mitzvah of tefillin? We have a whole description that there was an agreement between him and Laban that the sheep which are born with speckles would belong to him, and the white sheep would belong to Laban.
Oh, well, Laban means white.
Yes,
it?
That's yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing as well. So, that's right, Laban. So Jacob goes to the water troughs where the sheep drink, and he takes some sticks which are covered in bark, and he cuts off part of the bark so that the sticks now look speckled, like he takes off part of the bark, and he puts those speckled sticks in the water, and it has an effect that when the sheep see these speckled sticks, it has some sort of effect on them that when they mate after that, the lambs that are produced are speckled lambs instead of white lambs. All right? So what anthropologists call sympathetic magic. There's even a theory they didn't have to mate, but just by the fact that the ewe, the female sheep, drank the water which had the speckled stick, so she gave birth to speckled lambs. Okay? Virgin birth. So... now the question is, what about these sticks? Now, the sages tell us that in this procedure, he wasn't only doing something material. There was actually something spiritual that he was doing. And if you go into the deep meaning of the spirituality he was doing, it was the same as tefillin. Okay. Right? Now, tefillin are very, very important mitzvah. Man puts on tefillin, it's something tremendously important. It has an effect on his wife as well. There's the idea that the woman's mitzvah of tefillin is through the fact that her husband or future husband is keeping the mitzvah of tefillin. And so that is something incredibly important. And tefillin are very holy. God forbid if a person dropped the tefillin and it wasn't in their box or something or bag, they would have to fast, like so tefillin are very, very holy. Now, what about the sticks, the speckled sticks? Today, Jacob is using these speckled sticks, and then what does he do with them? Does he put them in a special bag and have them carefully on a shelf? No, he just throws them away. They're just ordinary sticks. After having done the mitzvah, the spiritual mitzvah that he was doing, the sticks do not retain any holiness. They're just sticks. That's because that is before the giving of the Torah. After the giving of the Torah, you do the mitzvah with tefillin. Tefillin are incredibly holy. And so therefore the holiness is being permanently passed into the world. So there's some sort of transaction that the world is being changed by our mitzvah. Not only are we doing the mitzvah, but there's some sort of transformation taking in the world, taking place in the world. So it's as if we could measure the effect of us eating matzah on Pesach and eating kosher food and wearing the right kind of clothing without shatnas and doing this and doing that and having a mezuzah on the door. In fact, the world is being changed. There's some kind of spiritual glow emanating from the world that most of us can't see, but it's there, and it's the effect of the permanent effect of holiness. So instead of holiness being a fleeting experience, it becomes a permanent dimension of reality. So that concept is there, like deep in the Lurianic Kabbalah, the way every mitzvah has a certain effect, which makes a permanent change in existence. So does that answer the question? You see, we are always keeping mitzvah, and it would seem to us that that is a fleeting event, but from this sort of Kabbalistic point of view, the mitzvah have a permanent effect on the reality around us. Now, what the Rebbe is saying is that it was the giving of the Torah which broke through the barrier between heaven and earth, broke through the barrier between the spiritual and the physical, so that this permanent change is able to take place by the fact that we do a mitzvah. That's what he's saying here. So line 5 on page Zayin. So Hudafka, how is it that the mitzvot are able to have that effect in the world? Is specifically Aliday Bitul HaGzeira VaMechitza, it's through breaking through the decree, the barrier, Shebeina Elyonim, which divides the upper realm, the mitzvot, Ba'atachtonim, and the lower world, the earth, the physical things. Now, the Rebbe is now applying this to Torah study, which is how we began the whole idea that when we study Torah, or we came across, when we study Torah, God is speaking the words of Torah. Through the fact that by means, the fact that through learning Torah, na'aseh shinui, a transformation is taking place. What kind of transformation? Romamut, being exalted in some spiritual way. Ba'adam halomda, in the person, man or woman, who is studying Torah. Va'ad shuhu mitached, till he or she joins, is unified. Im chokhmato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the wisdom of God, who al yedei, the fact that this change in the person studying Torah is possible, is through the fact shebematan Torah, that at the giving of the Torah, naseh bitul hagzeira v'hamechitza, there was a cancelling out of this decree, of this separation, shebein chokhmato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between the wisdom of God, the Seichel Adam, and the human mind. So you've got God's wisdom, let's write this here, divine wisdom, and then we have the human mind over here. So there's the divine wisdom and the human mind. You see, one way of understanding Torah, and there are many very religious and very, very learned people who present it in this way. We can't understand divine wisdom. God is infinite. We do understand through our chain of sages that because of what God said, we have to eat kosher, keep Shabbat, and all the other 613 commandments. That's what we do, and God rewards us for it. But we can't understand divine wisdom. God is absolutely infinite, absolutely beyond us. So in a sense, coming from different directions, you have the Rambam in one way, and we have Hasidic teaching in another way, and it's the idea that, you know, it's true, God is infinite. But nonetheless, we have a spark of the divine inside us. And we can make that connection so that our human mind can in some way appreciate this divine wisdom. And what this discourse is saying is that through the fact of the giving of the Torah, there was a transformation taking place, that divine wisdom can enter our mind. That by us learning something which is there in the Torah, or one of the discussions of the Torah later on, thousands of years later even, there is some divine quality entering our mind with the hope that that transforms us and makes us in some way, into some very tangible way, into better people who and more spiritual in our relationship with the world, in relationship with other people, that there should be a transformation taking place. Now, unfortunately, it often seems that the transformation hasn't taken place. And the Hasidic explanation of that is that that's because the person isn't appreciating it at this level. They're learning Torah in order to know what to do, or to possibly, you know, enjoy the study of Torah. It's extremely enjoyable to study Talmud and so on. And a person might be given great honor because of his knowledge of Talmud. But you need more than that. You need to be able to taste the divine in the Torah, and that quality of the divine has to be able to enter our mind, and then with the help of God it percolates through from our mind to our heart, and from our heart to our thoughts, and to the way that we behave. That's the goal. That's the goal. We may feel that we are right at the beginning of it, you know, it's a huge ladder going, you know, thousands of miles into the air, and we're right at the bottom of the ladder. But nonetheless, that's the goal, that our human mind should have in it some of this holiness of God, and that should somehow percolate through to different aspects of our being, all the different aspects of our being, so that our whole being should express godliness, which is one of the reasons why the 613 mitzvot, this number 613, is explained in terms of our physical body. There are 248 limbs and 365 sinews, and when you add those numbers up, it becomes 613. So it's as if the whole person is somehow involved in the keeping of the Torah, whether it's the things we do or the things we don't do. But all of that is something, being intimate with the divine in a most beautiful way. So that's the way, so through the fact of the breaking through of this decree at the giving of the Torah, there is a transformation in the person who now studies Torah thousands of years later, so that he or she is unified with the wisdom of God, and that's because of this original breaking through of the decree. Okay.
Why did Hashem make such a decree? What would be the point of it? He's the only one involved. He's the only one who could change it.
You see, if you begin off without that decree, yeah, you begin off with angels. And angels are not the project that God wanted. God wanted that there should be earthly human beings. And the earthly human beings who, you know, might enjoy going to a betting shop, you know, what is earthliness? You know, how do you define earthliness? So these earthly human beings should somehow be able to appreciate the divine. So in order to start that off, there has to be a barrier, and there's holiness up here, earthliness down there. Now we create earthly human beings. Now we got the earthly human beings who go wrong, who sin. Even when they're in the Garden of Eden, they do something wrong and get thrown out. So now we've got these earthly human beings. Now we can give them the Torah to make them unearthly. It's like building a bridge across a lake. So how do you build a bridge across the lake? You have to somehow make posts which are going to be in the water. So how are you going to make concrete posts which are going to be in the water? So you have to make a kind of a thing around where to keep the water away, and then you can make the concrete in the middle, and then you take away the protection. So there you've got a concrete post in the water. And so now you're able to have your bridge over the lake, you know. Or over the River Thames. So that's the this paradoxical quality, that at the same time there should be earthly beings, but the earthly beings should appreciate and absorb and express godliness. But there's always the way of thinking of it, that why have earthly beings at all? God could just be in a realm of holiness and spirituality, and the only kind of denizens of that realm are what we call angels, you know, spiritual forces, but they will never have that quality of the earthliness of the human being. Okay. Yeah?
Lucky then, I wish I could be an angel.
You'd rather be an angel.
They don't have that battle, do they, every day, every second.
Yeah, but that battle is the purpose of why we were created.
They'll probably say, I wish I was in to heal up in No,
he definitely doesn't say that.
Well, I mean, the Talmud gives a very fascinating story that when Moses came up Mount Sinai, so he was like in heaven, and the angels said, what is a human being doing here? How did it define a human being? Man born of woman. What's a man born of woman doing here? You know, like stressing the earthliness about our existence. What is this creature doing in this spiritual realm? So God said, he's come to get the Torah. To get the Torah, said the angels? You should keep the Torah. The Torah is so holy. Keep it in heaven. If you give it to human beings, they're only going to mess it up. So God says to Moses, what do you say? You know, make your case. So Moses says, I don't know what to say. What should I say? God said, take hold of my throne of glory and you'll get the right idea. So Moses took hold of the throne of glory of God and suddenly he had the right idea. He said to the angels, what does it say in the Torah? It says, don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Are these desires that you have, that you want to kill someone or commit adultery? The Torah is not for you, angels. Did you go down to Egypt? No, you weren't slaves in Egypt. We human beings, we could be slaves in Egypt. The Torah is given to us human beings. And the angels accepted that, and so he got the Torah. So you see, the purpose is a dwelling in this world. When we daven, at that moment you become like an angel. Right.
But if you're concentrating on your davening,
you become like an angel. Start a state we don't want to be.
Yeah, I mean, and then you come out of that and you're part of the world. That's the difficult bit. All right. Let's have a look. We're now entering a rather subtle concept in section Gimel. All right. V'hinei b'maylo amata. That's section Gimel on page Zayin. When we're talking about above and below, the upper realm and the lower realm, Shnei Perushim, there are two ways of understanding it. Ma'alu u'mata, sorry, above and below, b'makom, in terms of place, like a physical place or spiritual realm. The inyan zeh, the ma'alu u'mata, Shol Shehu Ma'akav, and this aspect of above and below really relates to the line of radiance, of divine radiance. It's called a kav, a line. The line of radiance through which God created the worlds. De'be'im ha'itam shachar me'on sof. Because if the flow just came directly from the infinite, hayukol ha'olamot b'shaveh, then all the worlds would be the same. But the way in which the Kabbalists explain the world is, you see, it's as if there is a, all around here is infinite divine radiance, right? That's all around this globe. And this is a globe in which the divine radiance is hidden. And then there is a flow of radiance which flows in, and it gets like less and less as it reaches towards the middle. And that creates, like, it's as if the very end of this is the universe, the physical universe. And round it are the different levels of spiritual world. You see, so there are different levels of world. We could call this, you know, the world of emanation and creation, formation, finally action. And then we have the actual physical universe. Now, it's in this is called the line. Now, in terms of this line, in terms of this line, this is the kav. You can talk about the higher part and the lower part. The higher part is more spiritual, the lower part is physical. You've got distinctions. Whereas if there wasn't this line, and if there wasn't, if just God created the world, the universe, full stop, without any such gradation, so the world, there wouldn't be any kind of different levels. So that whole idea that there are different levels, which is very interesting, you know, there are people who like to think about the world, there aren't different levels. But the spiritual teaching that we have through the sages is there are different levels. There's holy, and there's more material, there's something which is lower down. And that distinction between something being holy and something not being holy is very important. And it relates to the distinction between something permitted and something forbidden. There are lots of distinctions in life. And those distinctions are what gives us the ability to connect with godliness in the deepest level, with all our physical being and our spiritual qualities. Because there are these distinctions and we're able to relate to these distinctions. Now, that's one way of understanding what it means above and below. That above is holiness and below is physicality. Now, line 19. Ba'od perush b'maylo mata. Now, there's another way of explaining above and below. Sheklalut inyan itchalkut. That in general, the division between above and below, nikra b'shem mata, is itself below. Ki mayla hum lemayla mitchalkut. Because what is above is beyond any distinction. So in other words, one way of understanding above and below is in this realm. And another way of understanding above and below is that below is this realm, and above is over here, beyond. Now the whole nature of Hasidic teaching... Is it okay?
Yeah, I have to keep changing them.
Okay, oh I see, I'm sorry. Now, did you catch that?
Yeah.
You see, this realm we've described as being above and below, you know, so we can talk about this as being above and this as being below, because this is on a higher level and that's a lower level. But there's another way of looking at it, says the Rebbe, that this whole area, this whole thing is below. And above is out of the box altogether. Out of the whole chain of the existence of the spiritual realms, let alone the physical realms. So that's a completely different dimension of above and below. And so the unique thing about the Lubavitcher Rebbe in terms of the way in which he is teaching Hasidic thought, is he's trying to get us to connect with this most exalted level. And many, many, many of his teachings focus in this direction, that we should understand the point where the essence, the divine essence, is part of our lives. And if the divine essence is part of our lives, then everything in life is meaningful in an incredible, incredible way. And that's really what the way in which the Rebbe wants our consciousness to develop and change. Now, so line 21, Uchiyadua, or 22, and is known, Befedush HaMaima, in explaining the statement in Kabbalistic thought and also in Hasidic thought, in a discourse by the Rebbe's father-in-law and predecessor. Or Ein Sof Lamaila Maila Adein Keitz, the radiance of the infinite goes higher and higher and higher without end. Ulamata Mata Adein Tachlit, and lower and lower and lower.
It's in
lower.
Here, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's in your book on that's exactly it. Yeah, it's there.
Which one is it?
I
read it literally like a couple of days ago. Oh yes, it says 17. We can now understand the analogue in the spiritual realms, where simultaneously God's infinite light extends upwards without bounds and downwards without end.
Yes.
The latter light is that which is related to the created worlds. Yeah.
Right, so the Rebbe's linking this concept to that.
The light that extends upwards without bounds is a hidden and sealed light that transcends and will never enter the realm of descent into worldly revelation. This is the line referred to in the classic statement, "You are exalted above all the exalted ones and hidden from all the hidden ones." That's in the introduction of the Zohar. And the light that extends downwards is comes into the realm of revelation, is related to the worlds.
Yeah, beautiful. Right. So that concept, end of page Zion, the Lamata Mata, that this very low level, who are all Shibbechinat Gvul, is the radiance which is limited, Shoresh Hakav, ultimately the source of this line of light which gives existence to the different levels of spiritual realm and then finally physical world. Ulamaila Maila, and the light which goes above, who or habligvul, is the unlimited light, which is Shoresh Hasoivev Shalamaila Mitchalkut, which is the source of the transcending radiance beyond distinctions. Now, so in other words, what the Rebbe is doing is translating this: in the realm of above, we have two aspects of light, one of which is the source of the whole realm of below, and the other one is completely above. The Yesh Loman, one can suggest, the fact that at the giving of the Torah there was a union between above and below, who is in both of these aspects. Joining the above and below in the worlds, which is joining Atzilut, this is like the realm of Atzilut, emanation, and these lower realms. And also the joining of the unlimited radiance, which is higher than the worlds and beyond the worlds, with another radiance, which although it's not yet in the worlds, it relates to the worlds. That the idea of commandments after Matan Torah, is that through them there is a unification between God and His divine presence. So let's just take this further, or we're going to stop here, but let's just try to understand it a little bit more. There's the totally unlimited radiance, and then radiance relating to world. Now that radiance relating to world is really the divine presence. So we've moved the goalposts. Because when we began, we have a physical world with earthly people and a spiritual realm, and we've carefully gone through the way in which the earthly world can be permeated with holiness. So when a person eats food, that can be, or any other physical activity, that can be a spiritual, something imbued with holiness. Now that's very, very beautiful. We then took it a step further, that in terms of learning Torah, which is, now we're like a little bit remote from the physical, you're studying something. So there's your mind, earthly mind, and there's the divine wisdom, and some of the divine wisdom is impregnating the earthly mind. So now that's already at a spiritual step. Now we've gone out of the universe, beyond all the spiritual realms, and we find that there are these two different dimensions of divine radiance. One which is completely unlimited, going beyond, higher and higher, which in a way does not relate to the world at all, the part that Tehillah is deeply in love with. And then we have the divine radiance which relates to the world, which can relate to the world, even long before the world is there, the divine radiance which relates to the world. Now, this is the upper, totally beyond level, which is called the Holy One, blessed be He. And this is the lower dimension, which is called the Divine Presence, the Shekhinah. And the giving of the Torah makes the unity between these two divine qualities, so that when we keep a physical mitzvah, not only are we drawing godliness into our physical being and into the physical world and into the tefillin or the Shabbat candles or something like that, and making the home a beautiful Shabbat home, that it's tangible. It's a beautiful account. There was a young woman, we're going to end with this, but there was a very, very interesting young woman who was Jewish, but somehow she was being brought up in a convent of some kind. And people came from that convent. No, people came not from there. They're actually Swedish. And I remember them. I met them. They came to the Lubavitch house, and they were missionaries, Christian missionaries. And they came to the Lubavitch house, and at that time we had all kinds of leaflets, like mezuzah leaflets, Sandy Weinbaum and Bunim. They produced all these leaflets. So they took some of these leaflets. And then, unknown to anyone else, they went to this convent place, which is all part of the same sect, somehow. And they showed people, we went to this Jewish place and we got these leaflets about Jewish practices. And this girl, who knew she was Jewish and like she wasn't allowed to say anything about it, she got hold of one of those leaflets. And she then sent a letter to Lubavitch. And I believe I got the letter, and I passed it on to Rabbi Arkush, who lives in the Midlands, who is very much involved with talking to Jews who are involved with Christianity.
Oh, is this Tova Mordechai?
Yeah, Tova Mordechai.
I've heard her speak.
Yes,
And
so as a result of that, he met with her, and she ended up coming to spend a Shabbat, and later on she lived in the Weinbaum's house, but she gives a very dramatic description of her first Shabbat in their house, and how suddenly the Shabbat was absolute, like, you know, she came to the house and everyone is like rushing around, you know, getting dressed, having showers, cleaning things, preparing things, cooking. She thought to herself, this isn't very spiritual, you know. I'm used to, you know, they used to lie in a coffin meditating in her, you know, the group where she'd been brought up. You know, that's spirituality. And then she says, and suddenly Mrs. Weinbaum and everyone, you know, including her, I think, they all lit Shabbat candles. And suddenly, bang, it was just a completely different atmosphere. It was absolutely tangible. I mean, she's spiritually a very sensitive person. there was this absolutely tangible sense of Shabbat, you know, the way in which Shabbat had become part of this home, you know. So the making of the holiness in the world is like an important aspect of this whole process. And the ultimate dimension is connecting the unlimited upper reaches of higher and higher and higher realm of godliness with the quality of the divine presence relating to the world, so that the whole world becomes truly a vessel, because that's what we're talking about, to make the world a vessel for the divine. So the whole world becomes a vessel for the divine. And this is the preparation for the coming of Mashiach, when the whole world and every human being in the world will be someone who appreciates the divine and lives according to that, and the world will be filled with joy. So that's a little taste of this discourse.